I mentioned during our opening segment that I had had a conversation with George Thurdell back in August of 2015, which was a really good conversation around the whole idea of restraining orders and why it should be something that everyone should consider, because most people just don't understand what they mean. I thought it would be very useful for me to go and get that and put it on as a second segment today, because I think that although he talked about restraining orders in the first segment, this other segment will just add to the conversation. So let me take it to that interview that I did back then.
Why, thanks, Paul. And today I'm here with Herb Thurdell. And Herb is someone who's been is a judge and has been involved with various concepts, and one of them is restraining orders. And it ends up that it's quite useful for people in business to understand more about restraining orders. So, Herb, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, a lot of people know the term restraining orders. I think I mentioned when we were talking just ahead of time, because they heard it on Law & Order on TV. And most of those are involved with domestic abuse issues. You're not talking about that, correct? You're talking about how they're in business. So talk a little bit about how you would use these in business.
Well, a restraining order is a prior restraint. It means that a court, either on a temporary basis or on a permanent basis, permanent being usually about 3 years. However, the actual entry of the judgment, either a temporary restraining order or a permanent one, is on your record for life. Literally for life. It cannot come off for any reason. That's the state of the law. So if somebody gets a temporary restraining order against you, or you want to get one against somebody else, that's a life-altering event. Hmm. When you want to get a job, for a business person, knowing this information is helpful. I spoke to a CEO of a big corporation not too long ago, and I asked him, I said, well, what would you do if you did a background check and you saw there was a restraining order against the applicant? And he said, you know, off the record, our human resources people wouldn't get to step two with that person because we wouldn't want to take the chance of walking into some kind of liability section. Because realistically, some judge someplace, some neutral person, has decided that they're unstable or they're untrustworthy or they're unreliable. And the immediate impression, the perception is, I don't want anything to do with this person. And so the restraining order basically says you can't do or say certain things. It includes saying, because the people are now abusing the internet and social media by putting on a lot of things that are damaging and defamatory. And so if it goes on and you could satisfy the court that it's not justified, and then it's compared to free speech, then you get a restraining order against them texting and doing things on the social media and everything else. It's become quite broad, actually, in terms of speech. But it's a balancing between free speech, doesn't allow somebody to yell fire in a crowded movie theater, right. Free speech versus restraint by the government from doing things that you think you're entitled to do. In fact, the people who deal with Second Amendment issues, gun issues, are real concerned, because the minute there's a restraining order, either kind, temporary or permanent, you have to give up all your weapons. You have to surrender them within 24 hours, notify the court within 48 hours. Otherwise, you're in contempt of court, and that's a crime. So you got to give up the guns. One guy told me not too long ago that he's a hunter, and this is a killer for him because he can no longer carry his rifle. And so there are far-reaching ramifications in terms of getting these orders.
So I want to make sure that I heard this right. So when you use the word temporary, but you said that if you have a restraining order put up against you, it's there for life. So
including the temporary one.
What's the concept of temporary then? What does the word temporary mean if it goes for life?
Well, the concept of temporary is that until you get a hearing, this thing is going on out there.
Okay.
And so the person who feels threatened, or the person who thinks they're entitled to a restraining order, wants to get immediate relief. So they file what's called the CH-100 in California, a request for a temporary restraining order. And if the court grants it, and it's ex parte, meaning the court doesn't hear from the other side, it only hears from the person applying. They could say whatever they want, and we don't know how true it is.
Right.
So we look at it, and it looks like it's something real serious, and you grant a temporary restraining order. It's good for up to 21 days and could be extended. until there's a hearing where the other side gets a chance to respond. Mm-hmm. But the temporary restraining order, when it's issued, includes a surrender of the gun or any other weapons, and it includes temporary relief, but it's on the record if you get stopped for a traffic violation and you're within, say, 100 yards of the person that you've been restrained against, or you have a restraining order against, you're in trouble.
Mm. So
that's there, and you didn't even know anything about it. You got served with a document saying there's going to be a hearing in 3 weeks.
Right.
You know, somebody's trying to do this to you. So it's pretty, the temporary has a tremendous impact because it becomes part of what's called the CLET system, California Law Enforcement Technology System. It's also a public record. Right. It goes on your credit. It's a horrible thing to have. Temporary just means what it says, just for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But effect is permanent.
Now, so you have a temporary restraining order that's placed against you, and then means you're going to have a trial within a certain amount of time. You're going to go in front of the court.
Have a hearing.
Hearing.
You're
yes,
have a
that's
hearing.
Why I said go in front of the court, because I said trial was probably the wrong words to use.
Well, no, that's not the wrong word. It's a quasi trial. It's basically the taking of evidence, but there are different rules.
Right.
For example, as to hearsay, you know, temporary restraining order, you can say anything, and it's admissible. Even if it's hearsay, hearsay is a legal concept that doesn't allow for out-of-court statements made by third parties that is being offered for the truth. And so
right.
hearsay is admissible in restraining order cases, even though we don't have to give it a lot of weight, it's still admissible.
Now, if you had a restraining order placed against you, a temporary restraining order, and you go to court, and the court finds that whatever it was that was brought up just isn't valid, And they, what did they use the word vacate, or they
No, you just deny, you deny the petition.
Petition, okay. In denying
you
the
deny the petition for a permanent restraining order, and you as a matter of operation of law, the TRO then expires.
Right. Does that come
there's
off your records?
Nothing on there except the record.
So there's nothing that follows you for life that says you had a restraining order placed against you.
No, it is. It's still stays.
It is. Okay, so that's
it is,
actually
it's permanent.
Wow.
It doesn't come off. It'll show that on such and such a date, a temporary restraining order was issued by
right.
such and such a court. And for example, I rode with the sheriff not too long ago, a friend of mine, and he showed me how it worked on the computer. You punch in certain information, and there it comes.
Uh-huh.
The date that it was issued, by whom it was issued, and what the restraining order is, so that the cop in the field knows exactly what they're encountering if they stop somebody or if somebody complains about violation of the restraining order. Violation of the restraining order is a crime.
Sure.
You get arrested.
So let me, because this is pretty interesting to me right at the moment. Let's say I'm a business owner, and for whatever reason, I had an employee that was kind of like acting up or whatever they were doing, and they decided to fabricate some story and go in front of a judge and get a restraining order for whatever reason. Now, that's against me, and it's going to stay for life. As a business owner, what would you recommend that business owner do in order to mitigate as much as possible the effects of what would happen because of that restraining order?
Well, first of all, a party who has a restraining order issued against them, or even if it's denied, has no rights in California to sue for malicious prosecution. They may have some employment issues,
right?
And those are sometimes pretty expensive.
Right.
You have to be very careful, and you got to walk that line between conduct that is acceptable and conduct which is not acceptable. In the workplace cases, they generally deal with violence, credible threats of violence, as
sure.
opposed to normal civil harassment, which is you're annoying me. You'd be surprised in the hundreds of cases that I've seen from the bench, the stories that come up are outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are laughable if it weren't so serious.
Right.
But an employer is faced with a difficult choice. If they don't do anything and it turns out that person reasonably was a threat of some kind and they didn't get a restraining order, they're going to get sued for negligence or for failing to do due diligence in determining who was still at the workplace.
Right.
And that's not something you really want to be caught up in the middle of. If there's a tragic event like, you know, we see them on television all the time.
Yeah.
Somebody goes into the post office and blows away 15 people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is an opportunity to be heard. But if you're on the other side and you're an employee, you know, the risk is enormous.
Right. Now, so there's, I believe that what you were talking about now is I'm an employer and I see that there's something going on with somebody, and it's possible that if the normal, if an average person looked at that, they'd be very concerned about it. And if I didn't somehow do something about that and that person did react and cause problems, then I could, you know, I could really lose my business or whatever if this all comes out.
Yeah, you get sued. Right. If you haven't got insurance or not enough insurance,
yeah.
And you have a financial risk.
So that's that part of it. What about employees who put restraining orders against businesses or companies or, you know, people that own companies?
You can't do that.
It
has to be against an individual.
Okay, so they
against the company.
They do a restraining order against the owner of the company for some reason. Does that happen often?
No.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out because there's business people listening.
I don't think I've ever seen one, actually.
Okay, good. That would, because I'm thinking about somebody, if they wanted to really be malicious and harmful, they could place a restraining order against somebody who's going to follow them for life.
Well, they could file an individual request for restraining order that has nothing to do with employment, and they can get it. You can get that restraining order if they could prove it.
Yeah,
it gets into a swearing contest. These cases are decided basically on what's called a burden of proof.
Okay,
burden of proof meaning clear and convincing evidence has to be established that they fit within the statute, which is Section 527.8, for anybody who's interested, in the California Code of Civil Procedure. And the reality is that these restraining orders aren't really limited, except it has to be to a person.
Mm-hmm.
A person can only get one, and you can only get one against a person.
Now, I also saw that state by state, the rules around these things, restraining orders, can vary.
Oh, they vary dramatically.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, these are not domestic violence cases
we're
talking about.
Right.
Domestic violence cases are usually heard in the family court, and there, even though the general requirements are the same, generally, they're heard in an entirely different context.
Hmm. Now, if you were giving advice to someone who's in business, because you know, what advice would you give them, or what kinds of things should they think about in terms of when is it applicable, when should they be thinking about it, and under what circumstances should they go and at least talk to their lawyer about what's going on?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is document everything.
Okay.
And then I think you should show that you made an effort to resolve it as best you could. Now, these cases involve continuing courses of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
A one-time event doesn't qualify for a restraining order, not generally,
okay.
Unless there's a credible threat of violence that's going to result based on what previously happened, so you have a history.
Right.
Document everything, because you may be facing an employment or a discrimination case down the road. They will oftentimes say things happened that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So document everything. And if you decide to go for a restraining order, you should give them some advance notice that you're doing that, give them an opportunity to resolve whatever the issues are on their own, and then you get someone to file the proper papers for you. This isn't something that you should do on your own. In fact, almost every employer case, there's a lawyer, because individuals cannot represent the corporation not being a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So all these corporate entities have a lawyer that do this for them. They appear.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, the victims, and I'm using that word loosely,
mm-hmm.
Don't appear. That the testimony is taken by way of declaration, so there's not even a cross-examination.
Mm.
In fact, in celebrity stalking cases, you rarely see the celebrities, every now and again. But for the most part, there's a declaration as to what's going on. It's the same thing with these types of cases. Much is decided on hearsay declarations from third parties, and they're not there.
So the other group of people that will be listening to the show are sort of individual investors. And it sounds like if you know, given the conversation you had with that CEO, that you know, if you found out that the person you were interviewing had a restraining order against him, what would you do? And you wouldn't get any further. Does it make sense for somebody who's looking to invest in a company to do some background checks on individuals who are putting the company together?
Well, I certainly would inquire of management if they've had any issues with any of the employees. First, you want to know how many employees there are. If it's a startup and there's only two people, that one's pretty easy.
Sure.
Is there any history among the various people that would lead you to believe that there's a possibility that something will happen at the workplace?
Mm-hmm.
And the workplace is a pretty broad term. You know, if you have a company that's doing business in many different places, the workplace is many different places.
Right.
So you want to know certainly if there's any issues with any of the employees. That's the first thing, because you don't want to buy a company that's looking at a lawsuit down the road.
Right. I'm also thinking now that, because something you just said made me think about something else, when you talk about the broadness of a company, there are a number of places that are virtual companies where the people are actually working in a defined area inside their house. I'm assuming now that becomes part of the definition of the workplace.
Yeah, but the chances are there's little personal contact.
Okay.
If everybody's working in their own environment and they're not even seeing each other, I mean, it's possible, but it has to be a credible threat of violence.
Hmm.
And it's pretty hard if you're in Cincinnati and somebody else is in Chicago.
Right.
That anything's going to happen. Ultimately, that's a waste of time and money to try to get an injunction under those circumstances.
Okay, good.
That's just an opinion.
That's something that's... I just thought of this as kind of a... If I could put my own story together on it, it would be something where somebody was working at home and they were really frustrated with someone and they said something to someone else that basically said, if this doesn't get resolved, I'll take it on myself. I'll go down and shoot them.
Well, yeah, that's certainly is doable.
Right.
I would venture to say that in the many, many petitions that I've read, they almost always say they threaten to kill me.
Right.
It becomes a mantra. I'm afraid for my life because he came by and he said such and such and such and such.
Right.
That's the general allegations that's made in these petitions.
Right.
And the respondents is usually, I never said anything of the kind. I don't even know him. I wasn't anywhere near it, whatever it is.
Right.
And it becomes a triable issue for the court to determine. And then you decide as a judge whether or not the petitioner has proven by clear and convincing evidence that they are truly justified in seeking this kind of relief.
Now, one of the things that you said that business people should do in this respect is to document all the things, and it's under multiple occasions, you just need to keep good documentation. I mean, it ends up you need to do that for employee anyway, but especially in this perspective. Are there any other things that you would recommend that business people do in order to make sure they're doing this properly?
Just get good representation,
and
because it's a technical subject, there are requirements, and if you miss something, you're not going to get the desired relief. And it, in certain circumstances, and by the way, I spoke to the general counsels of two major corporations. When you call somebody like that, and you tell them that you're a judge and you have a quick question, they talk to you for some reason or another. And I tell them that it would be all confidential, that I was just inquiring. Because I do a little speech when I take the bench about how it could affect your work and your ability to get a job or keep a job.
Mm-hmm.
And they said the same thing that the guy told me when I met him in the movie, in the theater. My wife and I were at the theater and they were sitting next to us. And he was the CEO of this big corporation that came out in conversation. So ultimately, the reality is that it's a scarlet letter for you if it's on your name.
So when you talk about getting credible, you should, I'm assuming, are there lawyers who specialize in this, or do all lawyers have a background in it?
I doubt that many do.
Right.
It's kind of like a niche of a kind, and it requires a fairly large volume of knowledge of the subject, so you don't go into court looking like an idiot.
Right.
Specialize? I don't know very many people who specialize in it.
Right.
I suppose on the websites or the internet you can find people, but you got to look to see what they do. If it's a personal injury lawyer just looking for extra business, that's not who you want.
Right.
You're not looking for a corporate tax person.
Right.
Right. You know, you're looking for somebody that does this on a regular basis, and there are not very many people who do. I do it as a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you want to know about anything dealing with restraining orders, you can go to my website, which is restrainingorders.expert, restrainingorders.expert, and you can read the articles.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's actually a really good thing for people to be able to do, because now you're going to get into, I'm assuming, haven't been there, but I will be after the show, that this is pretty specific to what we're talking about, as opposed to you go to Wikipedia and everything's mixed together with, you know, it's personal stuff and it's business stuff and such. So I think that that's really great. It's good that you have it. I understand you're also in the midst of creating a book on the subject.
I am, actually, and it's going to hopefully be published in the winter of 2016. The editors are working on it.
Okay.
And it has a large chapter, maybe too large, large chapter on restraining orders. The book is tentatively entitled From the Trench to the Bench.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically how the legal system works, with stories about how things happen. Real, true life stories.
Great. You know, the time just really flies. We're just about over with our segment. If somebody wants to get in touch with you in some way, is there a best way to do it?
Yeah, just go to the website, restrainingorders.expert, and there's a contact information there. If anybody is interested in consulting with me on the subject, I have very few limitations. I don't hear any. I don't take any consultations where an appearance is necessary in any mm-hmm. court where I preside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only limitation. But I give people advice.
Well, Herb, this has been very instructive for me, and I really appreciate you coming on and talking about it. I'm sure other people will too. So thank you again for appearing, and I look forward to your book coming out, and look forward to reading your stuff on your website.
Well, thanks very much. It was an enjoyable event this morning. Thanks.
Thanks. Just a quick note. In going to Herb's site, the expert is the extension, .expert, so don't be looking for a .com, .net, .org. It's .expert. And Paul, it's time for you to take us to a commercial. Thanks.